actually hate grade cricket.
Hello, welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're talking about England levelling the series 1-1 thanks to Dom Sibley yucking his way to 120 test runs and Ben Stokes doing literally everything else in the same game. This is, of course, after Jofra Archer goes to see a friend and breaks biosecurity measures. There's also three men on a podium in South Africa in the 3TC Solidarity Cup, whatever that is, Australia's 26-man squad, and some big bash fixture news, and also the ICC World Cup being postponed officially now. Josh Hazlewood is on the show to talk Tamworth, Pat Cummins not being country enough, playing second fiddle to his talented brother, and Tim Payne shitting himself. Sam Robson is on to talk Sydney Test cricket, actual Test cricket, and being seen in the Daily Mirror in a Soho street party. Barney Ronay calls in, fresh from creating a life event with his 13-year-old son, to tell us about Jofra, if England are good or bad, and Ian Botham's imminent entrance to the House of Lords. Hashtag RTDC is about names of future test players, having your hens party at the MCG on Boxing Day, another instalment of Have I Been Alfred? This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggleruk.com, and Wisden Cricket Monthly, who are offering a good little deal to our listeners, which we'll tell you a little bit later on the show. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm right here with Sam Perry. Pezza, fuck me, man. Big show. Yeah, heaps going on.
Big going on.
Mate, we'll get right into the – obviously, the people just want to know about Jofra. What's he up to? And so in that vein, first question to you right away. Have you got a best reason or a best excuse you've heard of or you've given yourself as to why you're missing a game of cricket or you're late or something?
Yeah, I thought about this. Unfortunately, I don't have any good personal stories about it. I missed a game for a wedding once, which is just standard. You haven't played cricket unless you've actually done that and still been kind of treated with suspicion. It was my sister's wedding. I was MC, and it was still like, okay, you don't want to go to
I didn't know you had a sister, Pezza. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I do,
she's getting married.
Made it up. I did note, looking around, combing around the internet, right? So it's a bit of a cheat, I guess. But like in 1878, the Australians had a guy called Billy Midwinter.
Oh, Billy Midwinter.
Yeah. Billy.
Yeah.
The first Billy.
He's sort of about a mid-lottery, just did some same-up stuff.
These ones. So he qualified for both Australia and England. He's the only guy to have played for both Australia and England in tests.
Okay.
Right? So they're on an Ashes tour. He decides at last minute, instead of playing for Gloucester, who he qualified for, he wanted to play for Australia. Mm-hmm. Both teams are playing on the same day. Mm-hmm. Australia's at Lords and Gloucester's at the Oval, right? And so he decides, I'm going to play for Australia. Yeah, normal.
I'll play for Australia.
I'll play for normal.
This is Billy Midwinter.
Billy Midwinter. Now, the problem was that W.G. Grace plays for Gloucester.
The story's even better now.
Works out.
The doctor.
He's like, hang on. Billy's not showed up at the Oval. Where's Billy?
Yeah.
Oh, Billy's playing for Australia.
He's playing for Australia today.
Yeah. Hang on.
Doc.
Yeah.
Goes across the other side of town, horse and cart, presumably, over to Lords, and says, Billy, get in the horse and cart. Basically kidnaps him. Takes him back to the Gloucester game.
Is this true?
Yeah. Fails. Australia's left with 10 men.
Fucking hell.
So W.G. Grace kidnapped Billy Midwinter to play at the Oval. That's a good reason for missing a game for Australia. And just burnishes W.G. Grace's profile even more.
Well, as you know, I'm into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He had a bit going on, the doc, didn't he? Billy Midwinter.
Yeah. Yourself, you would have missed a bit of cricket for good reason and stuff or heard of a few things around the traps.
Well, I had the same stuff. I had my uncle's wedding once as I missed I missed the game.
Oh, did you? You got an uncle, Dan?
I didn't know that.
Just a reflex.
Yeah, exactly. Now, a good one for me was, I won't say his name, but a guy I play with, he turned up late and he said that his car had broken down, but there was rain that day. Yeah. And he turned up and he was hungover as fuck, like you could smell the alcohol on him.
Yeah.
And someone found his car about two streets further away. And he said he got a cab to the game and he was lit up.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was his. Well, he didn't miss the game. It was just late and it was rain, so I understand it. And I mean, it was in the early noughties, so you know, these things were acceptable back then. Yeah,
of course.
But Jofra had a different excuse.
Yeah.
And he went to go see a friend, Pezza. And just the language of that is like if I have one of my mates around, I don't say I'm having a friend over.
Yeah.
Unless I have many friends over, but they're not, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's a friend in the sense of like, oh, who was that, daddy? Oh, just a friend.
Exactly.
It was kind of like that. And I love that, like, with the just clarification. Don't tell Mum. So Joffre, obviously, he's missed the test because he's gone outside the bubble, which is another normal concept going on that we all thought we'd be talking about.
He was a bubble boy.
He was a bubble. Well, they were all bubble boys. They're all really, bubble boys. But he didn't want to be a bubble boy anymore.
He wanted to be a bubble boy.
Yeah. And he met a friend. And it's like that, like, people have obviously tried to clarify who this was, and the only clarification is that it wasn't Chris Jordan, his friend. He just met a friend, and it was for an hour or two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You've never popped around for an hour.
Yeah. It's almost certain he's got a chop out of it.
I like the elimination process of telling us who it isn't. Population in the UK, what, 70 million, something like that?
Something like that.
Well, it wasn't Chris Jordan. Yeah. I don't care who it wasn't. Who was it? And was it worth it? Probably an hour or two.
I wanted to ask you, because you've spoken about the sexual recession through this coronavirus quite a lot.
Oh, I don't play test cricket. I wish I did. More so than ever.
Would you travel 60 miles and escape the bubble boy lifestyle for one at this point?
All I'm saying for Joffre is it's just a short career and you've got to make hay while the sun shines. You know, it's a golden summer.
Yeah.
He's in the peak of his powers. He can drive to a different country for all I care.
Yeah. Well, he was extremely sorry for what he did.
Yeah, he was extremely sorry.
Extremely sorry.
Well, we had a good conversation with our close personal friend, Barney Rona.
Yes.
Who spoke very eloquently on this. So we won't be able to do it any justice, but stick around because he speaks very well about that. Yeah. But
he speaks seriously about it.
He actually speaks seriously about it. We're just celebrating him getting a chop and jeopardising people's health and stuff and playing for the England cricket team. But, you know, chop, worth it.
Exactly.
Let us know out there. What would you do? Dom Sibley's got 120, but it didn't look good.
Exactly. Like Australians, they'll be losing their minds about Dom Sibley.
I lost my mind.
When he comes out.
Tough. Let's be honest, tough watch this test match until halfway through day five. Yeah. Tough watch.
Yeah, again, let's commence with denigrating England's players.
That's fine.
They've actually pulled off quite a decent win. With a bit of time to spare after having lost a fair amount due to rain and off the back of Ben Stokes confirming greatness. But Sibley, too much of it on leg side, the wagon wheel's too much behind square. You know, like, you know, with Australians, it's kind of like, you can score 120, your second ton, first one at home and all that kind of gear. England have gone through 20 combinations of openers.
That's right.
Maybe one scored 100 now. Maybe he's the one.
He's the one to
partner Burns. That may all be so. The numbers are good, but – you know, runs behind square don't have as strong masculine properties as runs in front of square.
Yeah.
And therefore, you're going to be treated, again, with suspicion.
I don't know how you can chest the ball down the ground, but there's been players in the past who chest balls down the ground.
Absolutely. And we respect them more for it.
Yeah.
More front dog runs required.
Exactly. That's what I want more. But I was just looking at, like, the opening partnership of Rory Burns and Sibley. And I don't know if these guys will play. I just feel like Rory Burns, who started pretty well in his test career, that's just a fucking Pirates of the Caribbean looking motherfucker at the moment, isn't it? I'm onto it, yeah. I did tweet it, but I'll tell you to your face now. Not really. Yeah. No, not any sort of professional standard.
Yeah.
It's all crabby, and then I've got a right-handed crabby batsman who sort of – but he's played great cricket, so get him on the show.
Yeah, but can I – like, from an English perspective, kind of say, like, it's good that English batsmen look like this. Like, England's meant to be all about – you know, technique and nuance, and especially openers playing on green, weird decks and stuff. Like, I'd feel less safe if England was producing, you know, brutal, beautiful looking batters. Like, like Peterson was never right for me playing for England. Like, it's the same with Stokes.
He scored some chess runs.
Yeah, you guys this is English. This is not English. You know, you don't deserve this, but they do. They got them. Now they're returning to their openers that look crabby and, as you say, like, someone who's an actor in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Zach Crawley's batting three. Doesn't look right to me.
Yeah.
It's all just a bit Tony Gregg.
Yeah. Okay.
It reminds me of Tony.
An England captain.
Yeah, just a tall blonde guy, longy sort of, you know, thinny hair, long, like MCC fucking grip, and just doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm telling you things that don't feel right to me. Ben Stokes feels right to me. Fuck me, he's good.
He's amazing. Yeah. Oh, well, what's this one?
As Australians, we're supposed to hate him, and that's okay because he's in opposition. I don't hate him. He's just when he's not playing against us being you and me, you have to celebrate him being just fucking awesome at everything.
What was it, 170-odd in the first innings?
Slowest,
170-odd, and then
– so 176, slowest 100 he scored, over 300 balls, and then opens the batting in the second innings and hits his second fastest 50 ever by an England opener.
70-odd, 9. 3 wickets, including like a key one in the second innings as well, just around the wicket bounces at 88 miles an hour. Yeah, he's an entire team taking catches. I just want to pick up, again, just going to the negative of Stokes.
Of course.
I was more buzzing to face 300 balls than when I got my century. I never thought I could face 300 balls in an innings. Like, you got the soundbite of why you're always lying? I mean, like,
yes.
That's not right. That's not on brand.
No, that's not on brand. He had some chest runs.
Yeah.
In the second innings.
Yeah.
They're about chest runs now. Wait, what's going on with Joe Root? I'm just thinking about like England's world-class players. Fuck, it's funny watching Broad bowl. Like, why wasn't he picked in the first?
Yeah.
He's so good in England.
He is good.
Has there been a better momentum bowler? You know when like Broad gets a wicket and you go, well, he's going to take seven wickets now. Like he did in the Ashes that time and doing the shocking shock face emoji thing.
Eight for.
Don't like his headband.
Yeah, but they have to do it, you know, and that's on brand for England as well. You know, they're not getting haircuts and stuff for COVID reasons. So
They're going to put the bands on. Mate, what's one of the rules where, like, Broad handed his jumper to Sibley to then give to the umpire? The umpire's not allowed to receive the umpire's jumper. Know about that?
Can't help you there.
Also, Dom Sibley licked the ball and he was the first person to break the rules. I say licked the ball, he put saliva on it.
Well, it's the same thing, but yeah.
He licked it. Remember when Shahida Freddy bit the ball?
Mate, I remember our second grade captain literally licked the ball at first slip.
So gross.
Second slip. No, but just with his tongue and then I was at mid off early in the career and he obviously hurled it 50 metres into the air at a parabola that was not necessary.
I played the
just for his own entertainment.
Yeah, I played the game once where a guy in second slip spat on the ball and threw it to the captain. Fucking revolting stuff. Yeah. You see stuff now where people
pink
like
stuff.
You see like old sports highlights and people like slapping backs and high fiving stuff and you're like, oh gross, COVID.
Yeah, it's starting to look weird. Yeah,
it's starting to look weird.
God,
now.
We were free back then.
So free. We didn't know how good we had it.
Yeah.
Anything else from the test match? I got Broad bowls good, but I kind of touched on that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, just on that ball stuff. Like, there's a slow creep of this balls faced metric, you know, like the Cowan ton or the dentury.
It's not good, man.
Yeah. It doesn't have masculine properties.
Stop saying masculine properties to me. What about the umpires?
Yeah, no.
I thought the worst things are pretty unlucky in this game. They had so many umpires calls and then they had one in the fourth.
Mate, Holding was blowing up at lunchtime and to the point where the other guy's like, oh, I might just leave that alone. He essentially was suggesting that I can't remember the batsman or the batter was, but there was the first wicket where it was a nick behind. Joss Butler didn't even
appeal.
And Holding's essentially said at lunch, we'll get the
it's conspiracy theory stuff.
He does. He goes, I'm not saying he nicked it, and I'm just saying that there was a sound there. Yeah. It sounds technology.
Could have been
it
picks
up sound. Could have been anything. Yeah. And the guys are just like,
Ian Ward goes, well, they're sinks, and the guys they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Holding's basically saying that they're just putting sound there as the ball goes past.
NASA's next to him just going, well, he's fucking smashed it.
Yeah.
Well, he's smashed it, but, you know, that's what you're saying, cricket, isn't it? I like how we did celebrate Sky last week about them putting together a great package, Black Lives Matter. That's definitely true, great leadership there. Yeah. But, you know, let's also think about this week where they had Rob Key batting, pretending to be Rahul Dravid because he played with him at Kent. You know.
Cricket's got a way to go.
They're going on. Yeah.
Well done, England. 1-1.
Mate, Australia are going to go over there, it seems.
Also, they say.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
In September. They put together a tight 26-man squad for a four test ODI series, which is interesting, a four ODI series or some shit.
Yeah.
You excited for that? You excited?
It's one of those squads where it's more notable for who misses out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
26 players in it. Yeah.
And there's quite some absentees.
It's more embarrassing to miss it.
I'll tell you who's missed out, Pez. Sean Marsh, Pete Hanscom, Coulton Isle, don't know what he is yet, and Ashton Turner. They ain't in it.
Well, I don't mind it. Like, I like Turner, no runs. The other guys can kind of hit the bricks, you know. Like, you've asked what a Coulton Isle is.
Yep.
Hanscom's not passing the aesthetic test for us at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean Marsh's had a good go.
He's had a go.
But included, you know, Khawaja, Riley Meredith, Dan Sams, Josh Philippe, AJ Ty.
Yeah.
Sams is levers, Meredith is wheels, Ty is tricks, you know, Philippe is promise.
Yeah.
And you know, the other one that we haven't spoken about is that Papi's back. A couple of workout clips, Dan Ricardo and
Wait,
stuff.
When was he out? Oh, he got dropped.
Yeah, he dropped. Yeah, yeah. Papi's back.
Okay,
just quietly. They just introduced Papi back onto the scene. A couple of workout clips during lockdown.
Yeah,
come back, please.
Interesting. Yeah,
so just congrats.
Hang in the right circles.
Wearing the canary.
And Ricardo.
Again. Yeah, a couple of Red Bull advertisements.
Into that,
Papi, welcome back. Good to have you back.
Well, hard to even know what this tour is about because they're talking about how Australia's going to help England by saving their summer. Because after this test, so the test series won all, then they played third test of the West Indies series, which starts on Friday, I believe it is. And then they played Pakistan almost straight away. Then they play Ireland. And so it's a little bit like, they haven't got the numbers there. So I think Australia's going to go over there to try and just keep all that money pulled together between Australia, India and England. That's where all the money should go forever.
Just helping out.
Just helping out, mates. Just a couple of mates helping
Something
out.
Something to talk about there.
Mate, the Big Bash schedule got announced. They released the fixtures and stuff. This is on the back of the ICC. You tell me this morning, the ICC have now officially confirmed the World Cup's being postponed, the T20 World Cup's being postponed.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, was anybody thinking that was going to happen? Yeah.
Has anything ever meant less than the Big Bash schedule and fixtures being released? You're going through that like it's, you know, oh, when's fucking Tottenham away? when we play the Heat.
Well, the major thing that came out of that was Chris Lynn did a coward tweet and delete. So as soon as it came out, I'm extrapolating, but he's, as soon as it came out, there was a tweet from him saying, the golden goose has been cooked again. Quick delete, but obviously.
What's he talking about there?
He's talking about the fixture list. Yeah. Or some people in Melbourne say the fixture.
And doesn't now, feel right.
And that's fixtures. What everyone says in cricket now. I think that's an AFL thing.
Ain't right.
Yeah, that's all good. This is what happens. Because this has been going on for ages. It's now the longest Big Bash, and this is after years and years of many people saying it needs to be shorter for school holiday reasons and whatever. I can only guess that it's, you know, coronavirus. Let's just get as much of this in as possible. Yeah, They're starting it earlier and finishing it at a time that people liked. I did like that, like cricket.com.au said, like, you know, we've listened to the fans and we've done the schedules. Like, but the fans said they wanted less. The player, like, it's 14 games double. Per team. Players sort of wanted 10, but I don't know. They probably need the money.
It's all for the money, and it's all because they don't know how much coronavirus is going to affect the Big Bash. And so it's just,
But it starts after the first test. Like, it literally starts after the first day of the test.
Yeah.
Into the Big Bash stuff. I don't know. At this point, so it's Smith, like, if they can get it going, it's good.
If WG Grace was around, he's pulling him out. He's going to play for the Sydney Sixers.
That's right. Who's Billy Australia. Midwinter? Agar.
That's a great name. Agar. well, mate, we've got a couple of bumper lineups on the show today.
A couple of them.
We've got Barney Rono, who we'll hear from in a moment's time, and then we've got Josh Hazelwood and Sam Robson before hashtag ICDSC. But before we get into that, we want to talk about Wisden, our wonderful sponsor, who's jumped on board for us for this UK summer, this northern summer.
That's right. We want to talk about Wisden Cricket Monthly. Now, there's a lot of you who will be listening to podcasts out there, perhaps getting your avocado at the supermarket, hopefully wearing gloves and a mask and that kind of stuff. I don't know, gloves, that's not mandated, but you may as well be safe.
Joe Denley was running on with some bats for Ben Stokes yesterday, four bats wearing surgical gloves.
Yeah. I've missed out on the 11. I'm 12th man, and I must now wear blue gloves when I do everything as well.
Exactly,
as run the drinks.
It looked good though yesterday.
When you're doing your shopping or whatever it is you're doing, when you're doing your podcast, you don't want to say this publicly, but if you're someone who actually really likes cricket, get enough of the code,
but you'd never say publicly.
Of course, don't say publicly.
Don't do it publicly.
All right, barely admit it to yourself. Wisden Cricket Monthly is for you if you genuinely like cricket and you want enough. Look at this. It's six issues. A digital subscription.
This is just
issues.
For our listeners.
Yeah, that's right. £9.99 or $14.99 in Australia, 100-page magazine every month for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Six issues, I should say, really. Compatible on all major devices. That's if you really like cricket. That's 100 pages, interviews, columnists, freelance writers, informative features, in-depth analysis. For people who love cricket.
They got good stuff this month as well.
Yeah, Steve Smith interview.
Yep.
There's plenty going on. You know, stuff about, you know, should Stokes be the next test captain?
Mm-hmm.
The world according to Jason Gillespie, you know, who's on our last show.
Friend of the show.
Club cricket stuff. Profile on Stuart Broad by Derek Pringle. Great combination. If you love cricket, Wisden Cricket this Monthly is for you. Now, if you want that deal that I just said, bit.ly/WCM grade. That's Wisden Cricket Monthly grade. bit.ly/WCM grade. We're going to put something in the show notes about it. 100 pages every month.
Mm-hmm.
£1.67 if you love cricket. Don't tell people publicly that you love it this way. Just be cool about it. Look over people's shoulders, that kind of thing. Cricket in the family, whatever, I don't mind, but you do privately love it.
Yep.
Wisden Cricket Monthly is the magazine for you. So much cricket.
Barney Rone coming up.
Barney Rone is the chief sports writer for The Guardian, and he joins us for some reason from his 13-year-old son's cricket match. Barney, first question, has your son's performance burnished or tarnished the Rone name today, and will there be much chat on the car ride home?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting, you joined me at an interesting moment. Just standing on the boundary now, half an hour ago, I retired my own 13-year-old son for slow scoring. Had to be done. I opened the innings. We're playing the Rajasthan Royals on a sticky dog of a pitch. And he took it well. Came off, clattering himself on his own helmet with his glove, straight into the changing rooms. I told him he can't go in there because of the COVID. So it went down well. I honestly think with about 30 years worth of therapy, we can probably get through this moment. We'll be okay.
That's a big moment.
What a start.
I remember my dad retired me, and that's a point I still remember.
Yeah,
It's funny you talk about slow scoring, Barney. Like, for Australians, right or wrong, like, unless you're Alan Border, like, anyone that consistently grafts an innings will be regarded with suspicion, you know, from cradle to grave. Yeah. But a couple of days ago, Dom Sibley hit his maiden ton off what can only be described as 1,000 balls. Can you help us understand the cultural relationship England has with dour openers? Like, what place do they occupy in the psyche? Like, what is a Dom Sibley?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really interesting situation. I always feel like with Sibley, it's like a brilliant piece of performance art. It's like a parody of Test cricket. Like, this is what happens in Test cricket. You bat for hours and hours, and we're going to discover he's actually a comedian playing some kind of living prank on Test cricket. But, I mean, I actually love him. I think he's great. I love his lead. I love the way he just stands there. He literally stands there completely unmoved. It's like nothing has happened. The ball just goes. And it's gone. It's dead to him. But I mean, it's difficult. It's a response to the fact, obviously, top order was pretty brittle. And you know, you go from Jason Roy to Dom Sibley, who actually both went to the same school, not quite at the same time, and emerged as two completely different characters. I really enjoyed it. I loved watching it. I still can't quite get my head around the fact that he's not left-handed though. See, a right-handed nuggety blocker.
Yeah.
See, it seems odd to me, but you know, you let that go.
Yeah, it's like if Graham Smith was right-handed, then it's Dom Sibley or something like that.
Yeah, Alistair Cook. You know, they should be awkward and falling, head always falling over, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
For some reason, he's right-handed.
But obviously, it obviously is a team of characters, as you were saying, because, you know, let's talk about Jofra. And what on earth was going on there? I mean, has there been any fallout yet? Is it too soon? His apology was quite sincere, it seems. He was extremely sorry for, you know, the situation he found himself in. And, you know, what's the reaction, I suppose, is what I'm looking for since then?
Well, you know, because there has to be a reaction to everything.
Of course.
There has, of course, been a reaction. It's a real shame that it was him. It's just a real shame because it's immediately become this kind of culture wars thing, like everything else. Yeah. You know, everyone's comment on social media has some kind of subtext. So if you say, well, you know, it's all very harsh, he's being slightly overpunished, you're being sort of lenient, liberal, kind of, hey, you know, there's an element of microaggression in this. Whereas there's a whole load of guys with flags in their Twitter icon, you think he's let everyone down, he's a moron, he should be punished forever. Yeah. Of course, the truth is somewhere else. The thing with Jofra is it wasn't a huge mistake. It was a pretty silly mistake. Yeah. It's clearly a bit of a brain fake. I do think there's been a few occasions like this with him. There's been some silly little things. There's a sort of famous incident where he was seen in the dressing room eating a Mars bar and rounded on by the other players, urging him to eat the energy gels instead. And things like that are kind of held up as some sort of lack of professionalism or something. But I sort of see it another way in that he's not come through that. All of these players have been through county age group systems since the age of 9. You know, they've been processed through this kind of boot camp where you're taught exactly what to do. He didn't go through that. He emerged a different way. He's kind of, in many ways, a sort of slightly more self-taught cricketer. So maybe things like that haven't been drilled into him in the same way. But to me, that makes him not less disciplined, but more disciplined. He's got to the same place as Joe Root, who's been essentially an England player since the age of 12, on the strength of his own talent, his own determination. Yeah. And yet, when you get these little incidents like this, where he's perhaps not had the same team culture mentality, must do exactly what's told all the time, he's portrayed as some sort of wild man just for going back to his flat. It is difficult. But I think he's probably been punished about the right degree. But it's the kind of thing you have to be really careful how you talk about it. A couple of comments from Ashley Giles were picked up where he said this is potentially a disaster, this could cost us millions. But around that, he did actually say some more sensible things about, you know, it's a small mistake, he's learning, you know, it's fine. So you just have to be kind of careful with how you take it, because it does tend to bring out the worst in people. And people take a position. And it's just a shame it was Jofra who did this and not someone else.
Just to keep going on that, if you would, Barney, like there always seems to be a parry and thrust with him when it comes to getting the best out of him, like a reaction, then another reaction. You know, they changed the rules to get him in England, he nailed the World Cup, he knocked Steve Smith out, then he sort of struggled at Old Trafford, then struggled in New Zealand, then took 5 from South Africa, got injured. You know, then Root said he needed to bowl 90 miles an hour more often. Then this transgression where they sort of nailed him straight away and then they pivot quickly. Like, do you think England gets Archer? Do you think they're getting better at working with him?
No, I don't think they get him at all. I don't think they get him as a bloke. I think he's just a little bit different to the kind of processed county cricketers that a lot of the people in that bubble are used to being around. I don't think they get him as a fast bowler. I don't think England ever really got fast bowlers. You know, the same kind of English cricketer that fits the mould. So I don't think they really knew how to use him at all. I don't think they understood the way he bowls fast either. The way he works physically is maybe slightly different to quite a few bowlers they've had in the past. And so the reaction on all sides is kind of overblown. I also don't think we really know how good he is. I mean, how good is he really? His record's pretty good. He's doing okay. He's bowled some really good spells. But for those who support him, there's a temptation to make out that he's Michael Holding in his pomp. You know, he's not. He's learning. He's pretty raw in lots of ways. And he doesn't always bowl fast. Quite often he was bowling the same speed as Stuart Broad in the last Test match. I think there's general confusion on all sides, and I almost feel like if he wasn't from Barbados wearing a large gold chain and already tarred with this kind of set of assumptions on both sides, we'd be able to assess him a bit more clearly. It's brought out all sorts of fault lines in English cricket. I mean, I just really don't know where it's going to head from here. It seems like we're in one of those storms where a guy just keeps getting into scrapes. It already feels a little bit like it's evolving before our eyes.
Barney, where do you think this England team is at in terms of their cycle, their sort of progression? Like, you look at the bowlers and it's a great squad. It's a great strength in depth there. You know, you've got Sibley and Burns at the top, relatively stable partnership. You've got Joe Root and you've got Stokes and you've got Ollie Pope coming through. Then you've got a couple of little spots there maybe in terms of who's going to bat number three or whatever. But, you know, it's I feel like it's close. It's not quite there, but it's close. Like, where do you think they're at?
I think they're kind of okay.
Yeah.
But they're sort of okay in a way that could kind of fall apart quite quickly on a really flat pitch on an incredibly hot day. Do you know what I mean? The spinning, he's actually good. I don't really know. He seems like a good lad, and he's got some bits of his action seem quite good. But I actually heard Monty on your podcast the other day talking about him. And it was kind of revealing how he basically talked about him as a batsman who bowls a little bit of spin.
Yeah, well, there was a bit going on there as well.
Yeah, and you kind of thought, oh, right, okay, that's faint praise, isn't it? He's England's number one spinner right now. and you just don't know how that could work out. Plus, you know, Anderson, pretty old now. Get rid of him. Even Chris Wokes is pretty old now. I don't. You say the bowling group's very good, but there's not a huge amount of experience depth there. I don't know. It really depends what they're trying. You can see what they're trying to do. I mean, they came to Australia last time with Tom Curran and Overton in the team, so they're trying to say we need to be ready for this tour, which isn't happening for 2 years.
Yeah.
And bowling the quickest bowlers, killing them on dead English pitches.
Yeah.
I'm really not sure. I think it could go either way. I really do.
Just finally, Barney, I was hoping for a comment on Ian Botham's going back a little bit, who it appears may be given a peerage and entrance into the House of Lords. Boris apparently rewarding his support of Brexit. So Botham since said he couldn't possibly comment. So over here, I think there's a generational issue with Botham. Like, older people recognise his swashbuckling majesty, the fact that he's a genuine goat. Younger people mainly know him from his appearance on Open to Question in 1986, saying things like, people don't realise there are more deer in this country now than there were in the days of Henry VIII. Fact. do you think Botham will make a good lord?
Fact.
Yeah, I mean, it's just extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, you wonder what he's possibly going to offer the kind of democratic or undemocratic administration of the nation. I mean, what
I do wonder that.
He's famous for seeing in the. If you ever ask him a question or have a discussion with him where he didn't really know the answers, he'll turn around and say, "Well, how many test wickets have you got then?" and that's his notorious kind of answer to everything. You wonder how that's going to play out in the House of Lords in debate, you know, when he's stumped by whoever he's trying to battle of wits with over some issue. There's absolutely no, you can always fall back on the fact that he undoubtedly has more test wickets than anyone else in either houses of parliament. This is something.
How many Ashes series are named after you?
That's true. Barney, we should let you go because you've got some some therapy to get to with your son, but no doubt you've made the correct decision. Go easy on him and maybe buy him that cricket bat you said you would. I'm just talking about my own dad. Thanks anyway, Barney.
All right, cheers, guys.
Pezza, we've said this most weeks, but none of this would be possible without our good friends, Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmugglerUK.com. Custom smugglers, that's the play.
That's what we're talking about here, custom smugglers. No better time to sort out some custom smugglers than, you know, at what better opportunity are you going to talk about smuggling than perhaps, for instance, you know, maybe Jofra.
Yeah, put your own design on those smugglers. And the great smuggle this week was
without
Jofra escaping a bubble boy life.
One of the all-time great smuggles. So maybe you're like an image of a bubble and Jofra outside of that, escaping it somehow.
Yeah.
Is he in a car? How did he get to and from?
I don't think so, man. When I think of Jofra, I just think of like, great
wheels,
big smile,
yeah. Levers,
gold chain,
rig.
Just put that on the smuggler. Get that in front of the pegs.
Yeah,
you'd be doing very well. Great. That's just our suggestion for the custom smuggler this week.
You can do anything.
Just do what you want. You literally submit your own design. They put it on there. We did that.
Yeah,
did quite well.
Apparently, we did some
all time alphas.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
Great Australian rig.
Great Australian rigs.
Great Australian rig.
He's not Australian. It's one of the great rigs, Jofra. He's himself out of the bubble and utilised that rig.
Mr. Test Match.
From all reports.
Mr. Test Match, which he's extremely sorry for.
And it wasn't Chris Jordan.
That's another thing. On the back, you just say that it wasn't Chris Jordan.
Good point.
Jofra on the front, it wasn't Chris Jordan on the back.
There you go.
On that take, 30 seconds. You can do whatever you like. Imagination's there.
BudgieSmugglerUK.com.
All right, here goes. Well, this is probably an indulgent intro, so bear with me. But like, to kick off, I've got to say there's more than a hint of white whale about this interview.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, we were lucky enough to film something with Cricket Australia that involves, you know, the trio of Stark, Cummins and Hazelwood, not in that order. on top of realising that each of these guys were, you know, frighteningly enormous with very thick features, which is neither here nor there.
Features.
Like on the day, Josh Hazelwood was great to be around. He made conversation with us, made us feel welcome, like talking about London, Europe, you know, saying things out the side of his mouth, generally enjoying his company. Obviously, we took this to mean that he'd definitely join us on the cast soon after that.
Yeah.
But we had about 7 rejections subsequently. Not as many as Greg Matthews, but enough. So we started to think, Christ, we've obviously done something here during that filming. So it was with a bit of shamelessness. Like I asked New South Wales media manager again if Hoff was available.
Yeah.
And to our surprise, they've made him available. So it's with great pleasure we finally welcome onto the show one of our great white whales, the prodigal country alpha himself, 195 test wickets at 25, Josh Reginald Hazelwood. Josh,
how are you? Good.
That was the most absurd intro.
Yeah, yet. Silly. I apologize. I warned you.
Yeah. The country alpha.
Yeah, the country alpha.
Yeah, country alpha. I like it.
Hoff, and I will call you Hoff if that's okay. Let's start with grade cricket. You came through at St George, the club of Bradman. How did it feel to come into a side with like Copeland and Henriques as a 16-year-old and know that you were already better than them?
Good.
It was good. I started playing a great deal of grade cricket, which I guess is one good thing because it means I'm playing the next level. But it was good fun, actually. I mean, as you just mentioned, greats around the club. But obviously Moses and Copes and even Graham Rummers was there as well. Some good names.
Mate, we always start by asking how great cricket was, but you're a country boy, that's well known, and you go through a bit of a baptism of fire there before you even get into grade cricket. So you made your Tamworth first grade debut at the age of 14. Just tell us, what does a 14-year-old remember about playing against, like, fully grown countrymen at that age, like, both on the field and probably more important, off the field and in the sheds? It has to have been eye-opening, doesn't it?
Definitely. I'd say off the field, learned very quickly and learned very at a young age about certain things, which was a bit eye-opening. But I think on the field, that's probably the most I've been squeezed in my whole career, I think, in some of the first grade, especially the 14-year-olds. And as I was 17 or 18 before I left, there was very, very few swedges coming my way. So as I got quicker, the swedges got less, which is a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to, well, it's obviously heaps to dissect there. Yeah. First of all, they're just like sledging a 14-year-old to make yourself feel better about yourself. Obviously, it's the well-known trait. But like, I mean, how quick were you at 14? I mean, we had a bit of a tip-off that you bowled as quick as you do now when you were 16, which is scary for a lot of people, not me, but because I didn't have to face it.
Quick now, so.
But like at 14, were you scared? Scaring people?
In first grade in Tamworth, there's probably a couple of guys from over 55, you know, pushing 60, so hopefully they were scared.
But certainly, if I got the 16, I was hopefully starting to frighten a few guys. But the odd second grader who obviously knows as a wedding happens, and the odd second grader gets the call up, and hopefully he was frightened.
Just like sticking with the country cricket for a sec, this is a story that was told last year, but you played a country game with your elder brother Aaron last year, and I just sort of have a question, like, despite the fact he took 9 for 18 in that game off 20 overs, given you're a bowler who played that game as a bat, do you feel bad that you still managed to out for him?
he dominated that game. I was lucky enough to play a game, as you said, back in Tamworth. It was good fun. It was very relaxed. Obviously, plenty of beers the night before, the whole team. So that's just the usual training session. And then, he proceeded to take 9 for 18, as you said. I think he had the 10th guy punt or W given not out. So unlike my brothers, it could be umpire spray, but that's exactly what happened. And I think he took 6 or 7 in the second innings as well.
Oh, my God.
He was really out to impress in that game.
The funny thing was I could first flip, and then by the end of the game, I was sort of 2.5, and there was no first or third as they usually got the catches. So he was happy I was back there to hang on to him.
Did he feel the pressure to take 15 wickets in that game because you turned up in your baggy green? Yeah. Like, it's an amazing day out. He's taken 9 for then 6 or 7 in the second innings as well. Incredible. I mean, you played as a bat that game. I mean, I was having a look at your stats before. I'm actually surprised that you haven't got a test 50 yet. I mean, can we look forward to some Hazelwood runs in the future?
Tamworth form? I came out with a flow, actually. I got a couple of 30s early on, and I don't think I've got past 10 in the last couple of years. So they can only go one way, hopefully.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Especially playing those Tamworth decks. Can do anything. I mean, speaking of, obviously it's, coronavirus around the world at the moment and sort of people putting their feet up. I'm looking at guys, like, especially the batsmen, on Instagram at the moment, just itching for a hit. Ball machines, Marnus is in the backyard, just playing backyard cricket endlessly. Finchie's like shadow batting in the, shadow batting in the corridors. Like, I mean, given that, bowlers can only bowl 6.4 overs of training every second blue moon, are you just enjoying just time off not bowling, which is just the worst thing for your body?
Yeah, it's been great. So those 6.4 overs every blue moon have been fantastic. you don't find any of us posting Instagram posts of us.
No, exactly.
A good reason. So we'll just save them for the games, hopefully.
It's funny you mentioned Instagram, Hoff. Like, you're a guy who famously shuns the fetid sewer of social media. Like, I just want to know, like, do you ever wake up and think to yourself, oh, I've made a massive mistake here? Like, I wish I knew more about memes and woke scolding and cancel culture?
Not really, no. I'm in enough WhatsApp groups that I get all the good stuff without all the bad, so I just put my own filter.
Sort of like getting more into the professional realm now, obviously going from, Tamworth to grade to, your test career now. Yeah. And I'd imagine...
Skip New South Wales, which you pretty much did.
I didn't realise he played.
Yeah.
I thought it was, St George into the Aussie side. No, but I'd imagine...
I think you're thinking of Paddy Cummins, right?
Well, we'll come on to Cummo in a second. Mm. But... like, I'd imagine that winning or retaining the Ashes last year, you taking the final wicket of Craig Overton, LBW at Old Trafford, one of the most iconic moments in Australian cricket history the last few years. But something that sort of slipped under the radar somehow is that Tim Payne has literally said that the moments before he literally shit himself.
Yeah.
And that just has not been spoken about. And I need to get more insight about the circumstances surrounding it, how he told the boys afterwards.
Because it was reported.
It was reported.
And then everyone just sort of forgot about, like, so that's a normal thing.
Yeah, at Old Trafford always happens there. Yeah, yeah.
So I obviously was bowling right at the end there, just after Payne admitted he shit himself. But at the time, he only said he pissed himself. So I'm not sure exactly what happened. But I got to the top of my life for the last over. I was pretty certain it was number 2 because I could smell it. And he couldn't stand up and said, there it is, just doing it to your bowling marker.
So disgusting.
I like how you said, I only thought he pissed himself. Oh, that's normal as well. Another normal thing. Yeah. Oh, that's fine.
For a week, but maybe.
Yeah.
just on that, maybe a little bit more serious, but this is just in relation to the series in the UK going on at the moment. Like, rotation, it's been a long part of thinking with teams, but usually on the shorter formats. But, like, we recently saw, as we go to where Stuart Broad was axed for England's first test, maybe to rest his body, maybe an eye on the future. You were rested before the first test of the Ashes, then you'd play the next four, take 20 wickets at 21. Like, do you have a view on philosophy of resting? Like, should teams pick the best available team on the day, or do you think some test matches are more important than others?
No, I think probably in both those cases, I'd say supporting myself above group, I'd say. I wouldn't say I was rested at the first test. I think probably I was coming off not much confidence. You know, I was going really well in county cricket in the tour matches. So I'm assuming the same sort of thing happened to Brodie. I'm assuming Wood and Archer looking great in the nets with Anderson, and they thought we'll go with two spaces. So may have hurt him in the long run, but yeah, I'm sure Brodie will probably play, if not the next test, the one after.
Would you have fancied a rest last year when Pujara was batting for like 15 days in a row? Did you think about maybe putting the heels up?
Yeah, I would have loved the rest of them, actually. That would have been good. Especially in Adelaide when it was 45 degrees.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to seeing, you know, the Indians come back this year? Well, fingers crossed anyway. Indians coming back this year and the rest of the scaredy bats, as reported last year, but especially Bajari. You must be looking forward to having another go at, you know, winning this series this time, especially with Dave and Steve back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a totally different looking lineup, to be honest. We've got a few batters out, and then they're back, a lot of Marnus and Bowles have got a few more seasons under their belt. So, I think it'll be a different prospect this time around. So, hopefully, obviously, we've got to Brisbane first, and then who knows after that, it could be. I wouldn't mind that coming up to the taking over the first game again. So, hope for that.
Everyone, I was just speaking of the quicks in the Aussie side, like everyone knows that you're a package deal with Stark and Cummins. Like you can only be referred to as a trio. I've noticed lately that they've been working on their individual brands. Like, you know, Cummins is obviously the face of everything, and the Starks were recently featured in Good Weekends dressed in whites on a tractor or something. Like now that it's every man for himself, I'm just wondering what plans you have to build your own personal profile in the media.
No, I'm happy. I take free things when they come, but social media's probably a little bit there. Mm-hmm. I take the free sticks from Drum and Golf. There's a plug. So
I'll
give you guys.
Simple man.
I just want to know, like you're a guy from the country. That kind of is your brand. But then a few months ago, Cummins is out, you know, in all sorts of media with like country boy photo shoots from his property in the Southern Highlands. Like, do you think he pulled it off, or did it offend you that a man from Mount Riverview in the Blue Mountains appropriated country culture for his own commercial game?
when that came to light, there was a fair bit of sledging going on in the WhatsApp group, that's for sure. You know, a team physio got stuck in, and then I jumped on the back of that. So,
Yeah, and he's like, because no one really knows what Josh Hazlewood's sledging sounds like apart from that New Zealand game a few years ago, which was funny. But
who was the third umpire?
Yeah, who was that guy? Yeah, he's on the line now. Yeah. You don't want to give up what's in the WhatsApp thread, obviously. That's a cardinal sin if you did that. But what does a Josh Hazlewood sledge to Pat Cummins sound like? You know, you'd have no problems heaping shit on him, I presume.
Oh, absolutely. About all the. Obviously, all the roles he plays in getting free stuff, that's probably the main thing. obviously, the farm stuff is just touched on where it's, you know, got a property he visits once every blue moon and does no work on. So, having
quietly seething about that.
That's right.
Never wear the Danny's softest hands on the farm, Pat Cummins. Yeah. Well, what about when New South Wales obviously received the shield last week? All the international players posed for the photo with the shield on the upper deck of the members, and then all the rest of the players / fringe grade players were on the bottom deck.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Steve Smith just posted a photo of the international players on the top deck Instagram.
Like, how is that arranged? Can you just run us through, like, the person who said, listen, if you've played 20 tests plus, head up to the top deck of the ladies or the members or whatever it was? Yeah.
Well, actually, I actually couldn't make it because I only found it a couple of days out. I already had prior booking, so I couldn't make it, but yeah, I saw that photo and, you know, the five Aussie guys up the top. I'm not sure Paddy even played a game last year, did he?
Probably not.
He might have played one, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing.
And they should always remember where they're from.
Yeah.
Mate, thanks for enduring that, Josh. Great to chat with you. Great to finally chat with this white whale. I don't know if we did anything a few years ago that kind of turned you off, but I hope today's made it okay, and we'd love to chat with you again at some time soon, maybe in 3 or 4 years' time.
That's all right. I'll catch you in 2030 or something like that.
Dad?
Yep.
Are you proud of me?
No.
Do you like my TikToks?
No, and no one else does either.
So you're not even fun and funny?
No.
I can't think of a bloke that's better traversed the Australian and English club professional and international cricket scene. His dad, Jim's essentially the king of the SCG. He came through New South Wales 19s, Australia 19s, very young debutant in first grade. Then a couple of years later, he's opening the batting for England, a ton in his second match. Goes on to score 9,750 first-class runs, 23 tons, 39 50s with Middlesex still going. Playing a bit for Easts in Sydney when he can get home. I'm sure he won't appreciate his career being so carelessly summarised like that, but either way, it's our pleasure to welcome Sam Robson onto the Great Cricketer. G'day, Sam.
Thanks, boys. Cheers. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, lovely intro.
Nice one. Mate, we won't start with tedious conversations about nationality, etc., but surely Great Cricket occupies a big place in your heart. You know, what's your relationship to what many call Sydney Test Cricket?
Sydney Test Cricket. As you said there, probably just my old man originally. He played very seriously from about the age of 20 to about the age of 65, I think. He played all his life. He's from the country originally, but then moved to Sydney when he was 18 or 19 and played for University of New South Wales. And then he kept playing lower grades till he was old. I played with him as a young bloke myself. I think when I was about 14, I played fifth grade with Dad. So that was an experience in itself. Getting changed around nude 50-year-old bloke as a 14-year-old. I don't know if that would be legal today. I did my level 2 coaching course last week, and that was definitely a no-no. So
that's part of the course.
Yeah,
now.
Things weren't as serious about those sort of things 15 years ago, but. Yeah, so I did that, and then as you said, yeah, worked my way up, and yeah, started playing first grade quite young when I was 16, 17, and then moved to England when I was 18. My mother's family are all English, so I've had the British passport there, and then that was it. So I've been here since 18, but I love playing great cricket. I still go back and play for East when I can, as much as I can. It gets a bit harder now, but I do love it, and I still follow it closely and everything, and I've got a lot of good mates from great cricket and a lot of sort of good stories and good memories. So, it's been good fun.
Obviously, obviously a lot of people wouldn't know that East blue helmets, blue badges, that sort of thing, and just thinking you could actually wear your England lid playing for East. I hadn't thought of that until just then. Are you doing that?
Yeah. Training.
How often are you doing that?
I actually do. I wear my England Lions lid, which has red lines underneath. But, I tape it up and I colour it in black pen, the tape, instead of it sort of being the white tape. I kind of look modest, but I do. I like people to realise that there is a bit of tape there. That's a good point. Yeah, I've never worn the main test helmet, but... I should wear the main test helmet because it's pretty new. I only wore it about 10 or 11 innings, so I should wear that one.
Well, that's obviously what someone would sledge you with. They're from second slip at Bankstown away or something. So mate, this bloke only batted 12 times in test matches.
Absolutely.
I wonder how English people into the professional setup regard grade cricket, because it's pretty. It's a relatively famous competition, I suppose, heralded in some capacities, mainly because this is the Great Cricketer podcast, and I'm saying it like that. But in this current test lineup, there's Denley who played he played for Balmain, and Dom Sibley played over in Perth a couple of years ago. So there's still people coming over, who succeed in cricket, who started in Great Cricket. Is it still regarded highly in the UK? Do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. I think it is. I think it's probably changed a little bit. I think probably in general guys have done a little bit better when they've come over in recent times. I know even speaking to my father and whatever, when he has a few beers, they'll bring up old big test players and whatever, and they'll say how awful they were and they should have been in third grade because they got 3 wickets at 75 and whatever. And I think that probably still happens occasionally, but I think most of the county players have gone out and done pretty well in known places like Sydney the last years, and that's probably helped their reputation in general. But they they do. It is highly regarded. It's obviously, it's very good cricket, and it's better than sitting in a cold flat in England in December and January. So that's why most guys go out there, I think. But there's definitely a little bit of there's a little bit of angst there. I've tried a few times to get Stephen Finn. He obviously played 30 or 40 test matches for England. I've told him a few times to try and come and play for East because he's a good friend as well. And I just think he just can't get his head around it. Just the idea of running into bowl on a Tuesday and a Thursday with a fourth and fifth grader taking it more seriously than him in the next net. He just can't get his head around that. And it is horrifying for him. I've tried to explain to him that, and, Stephen, he's just come through the system here. He's sort of played for England. In the 20, and I don't think he's played a club game since the age of 16. So I tried to explain to him that it is good fun. The bars in Bondi and the eastern suburbs, they're good. Mm. They're beautiful women. The beaches are beautiful. Mm. You've only got to have one bowl each Saturday. But the thought that a club player could actually smash him all over the place is just too terrifying for him. And I still haven't been able to get him out there to this day. So it is highly regarded. There's no doubt about it.
And speaking of, I just want to sort of fast forward to the test stuff happening at the moment and like Aussies conversely not being able to wrap their heads around things. Like, I just want to read you an opening line from Fox Sports Australia today about Dom Sibley, who literally just scored 100 for England. Here's the line. He has an ugly stance, scores almost exclusively through the leg side and is unlikely to get the crowd off their feet. But England just might have found an opener to take on Australia next summer. Like, you'd be in a good position to answer this at all levels. Like, why are Australians offended by anything that doesn't look pure and symmetrical and good?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether I've only read a little bit of your books, but yeah, there's a little bit of talk about the egos and the rigs and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I don't know, but. Yeah, he's a good bloke, Dom, and he's a good player, but, yeah, it is very boring. Like, there's no doubt about it. I watched the other day for half an hour, and you had Ben Stokes at one end and then and Dom at the other. But, I don't know. He's got a lot of runs the last year and a half. He's got his own style, and he's got it all worked out. So, it'd be interesting to see how the guys go over the next couple of years. I think England are in a bit of a funny place, really. There's a few really sort of world-class players, Joe Root and Ben Stokes and guys like that, and obviously Archer. When he's playing and not driving here, there and everywhere, I don't know why he would be driving all over the place. No, but then they've got other new...
just catching up with a mate.
I think he was going to see his dog, actually, in Brighton just for 40 minutes.
It wasn't Chris Jordan. We had that clarification.
Give the dog a pat.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how they go, England, because, as you said, in amongst those sort of world-class players, they've got guys sort of starting out and Anderson and Broad coming to the end. So, it'd be interesting to see what happens next couple of years.
I think we've spoken previously about this, but, you've been in a good position as well to talk about, just the... like how cutthroat test cricket is. Like you obviously scored 100 in your second test, and I remember you speaking about, you had an opportunity against India where it was a flat wicket and, the ball wasn't really seeming much at all, and, you didn't make most of that opportunity. And, I see, Rory Burns and Sibley, they're relatively stable in that position, but, every time you go out to bat is essentially could be your last game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think... for me, I don't sort of look back on it and, look back on it as a failure or anything like that, really. I sort of, I did modest in my first few test matches and then didn't do well enough. But, it is. I think especially in England, you've got, all over the place, Australia and wherever else you've got the media. I do definitely think here probably the media with more newspapers and more journalists trying to outdo each other, but definitely the media stuff is a big challenge. There's no doubt about that. But, it does. It can all happen so quickly. I know myself, you mentioned there against India. I think we might have mentioned that having a beer a few years ago. I started pretty well. I got knocked over in my first test match. And then in the second one, I got 130 against Sri Lanka. I was actually 127, but I'll round that up. so that was against Sri Lanka. And then we had a great night after the test match in a booth with all the boys, and I just thought life doesn't get any better than this. And I actually thought life doesn't get any better than this again a few days later when I was facing, it was a flat wicket. Stuart Binney was bowling, medium pace with MS Dhoni up to the wicket. It was packed Trent Bridge crowd. I looked around and I thought, this can't get any better. I could be batting at Trumpa Park in third grade facing this bloke in short bat, not moving him around. So it was literally like batting in the middle net at Waverley. And I thought, this is amazing. But then, yeah, that was a draw. And the next few games were green tops for Anderson and Broad. And I was playing at Benson's Lane in 50-degree heat 4 months later. So it was a rude shock. But it can change quickly, I think. Even Rory Burns, you know, he did well last summer in the Ashes and whatever, but then he got injured in South Africa in the winter, and then, it all changes quickly. So, it does it all. It can all move fast, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. There's only two things that make me cry, and this is a weird way to start a question, but stay with me here. It's sportsmen achieving their dreams and soldiers coming home from war, seeing family members.
YouTube clips.
Yeah. Those are two things that hit me. And I was just sort of like looking at the stats today and thinking about your career, you know, just looking out, staring into the middle distance, thinking about Sam Robinson's career. And I was just kind of thinking about, like what is that? Like, what's the moment? Like, you've actually achieved the greatest thing that you can achieve in the game is 100 in test match cricket. Like, is it a thing where you hit the 100th run and you're just like this overwhelming sense of achievement or pride, or is it kind of like, no, I just want to keep batting now?
Double up.
Yeah, you start again. You mark center. Yeah, someone yells at double up, start again. Is it that, or is it kind of like you look back at it a few years later, or you still haven't got there yet, and think about, fuck, that was actually a pretty cool thing that happened?
Yeah, a bit of both, I think. I think for me, I think the unusual thing for me was obviously got my opportunity to play when I was 24, and then it was one summer, and then sort of that was it. I got dropped, and I went on a couple of A tours after that, and sort of been in the loop a couple of times, but then that's it so far. So I've just turned 31 last week. So I suppose you're always thinking, you know, all sportsmen, and you know, when you're a professional cricketer, you've got to be thinking that you can keep getting better. I think a lot of the guys that I played with, Chris Rogers and even guys like Andrew Strauss and Adam Voges and blokes I played with a lot at Middlesex, they were all probably playing their best into their 30s, and you know, guys like Rogers and Voges' case, probably their best in their mid to maybe even late 30s. So I suppose you hope that you keep getting better and you keep improving. I also think like selection and things like that, it's all a bit of timing as well. You know, I probably think I'm realistic. I'm probably a better player now than what I was when I got my opportunity, but that's life. That's just how it goes. So yeah, hopefully I can keep playing well here for another few years and see how we go. My girlfriend's Australian, so I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but we might be back to Australia. So maybe, four, five, six more years of county cricket, maybe play for England again, and maybe one final year as a county player, being really bitter and cynical and resentful, and then retire and go and play fourth grade till the age of 55. That would probably be the fairy tale ending for me.
Fairy tale ending.
Yeah,
fairy tale. Dollar run in fourth grade. Fuck, that's good work if you can get it.
I think it's funny. I mean, there's like you know, a lot of the guys who open the batting in England, I think opposition and players who play for England average pretty much between 20 and 30 anyway. So, I don't know if expectations are out of whack about how guys are meant to play there. On a completely separate note, Sam, I was just perusing the Ham and High digital publication the other day, which, as is my wont, and I noticed that you've been...
Play a news day back there, Ham and High. I don't think I even read that myself.
It's a fair publication. You've been submitting essays for a degree in business and sports management, so I just wanted to know how that was going, and does COVID-19 make it a good time to invest, and if so, in what?
Yeah, it has. It's been a funny few months here, like everywhere in the world, but probably here even more so, I suppose, back in Sydney. I've seen things starting to move a bit here, obviously, but it was a slow few months, so I didn't do much. I sort of, spent a bit of time trying to knock off some of that uni course, which I'm doing, which is handy. And then, just a bit of sort of Netflix and whatever. The main thing I actually got up to was when my girlfriend was out, I normally tried to go into the room, lock the door, make sure that the Wi-Fi was fast, and I got Rob Linda Tour. That was sort of my joy for the week.
What's your go-to?
Yeah, what's your go-to? Michael's, what stuff are you looking at?
I don't know if it was Rob Moody or not, but one that came to mind was a Today Tonight interview with Dean Jones from about the early 90s.
Nice. Fuck.
So good.
Which was quite interesting. It was 4 or 5 minutes about, why he wasn't picked in the Australian team and whatnot. That was
everyone's
that
got their own fetish,
and
don't they?
Later, Ed Bastard. They do, yeah, exactly.
Right, private tab that
that's mine at the moment. So, yeah, Dean Jones, early 90s. And then, yeah, Michael Slater, Ed Bastard, 2001, I thought was good. I think he got about 80 on the first day and then played a massive drive the next first ball the next morning was out. That was, yeah, that was entertaining as well.
Yeah. Well, just speaking of what you have been up to, we had a DM come in and he said, it's from Daniel Roots. He said, can you please ask Sam Ross for clarity around this in the UK Poppers
Daniel Roots
last weekend? It's an article for the Daily Mirror. London's packed Soho district turns into one big street party.
It's just a big picture of Sam Robson.
Picture of Sam Robson in that.
Shoulder to shoulder with a couple of partygoers near the DJ.
Yeah.
During, yes, social distancing.
We're just seeking some clarity.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Yeah, look, it wasn't my finest hour. My view initially was if Boris Johnson wants to sort of go out and revel and pump money back into the economy, then I'm more than happy to do that. Granted, it wasn't a great look for social distancing during the global pandemic, but yeah, it was just one of those days. We went into town. I think we went into Mayfair at the start, and we had. Or it was supposed to be five or six beers, and it turned into about 506. And then, yeah, before you know it, I woke up the next morning with messages coming in. And, yeah, me next to a woman who I've never seen in my life. So that didn't go down great for a few hours, but I cleaned it up pretty quickly. So I think I got away with one there. But,
yeah, I reckon yeah, you got so away with it.
It is good, though, that main street of Chinatown at the moment on a Saturday night.
It's good.
Who needs pubs open when you've got a local intersection and an off license? That's the thing at the moment. So, yeah.
Oh, on that note, Sam, thanks for joining us this week. The Great Cricket. No doubt we'll catch up with you later on in the UK summer and beyond. All the best for Middlesex as well. And, yeah, making sure you get that fairy tale ending in fourth grade for $1 a run.
Absolutely brilliant. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for that. Cheers.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I guess me just whispering in their ear saying, get rarer.
But realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I'm proud to call it the Joel Wilson Institute.
Look good, play good, feel good.
Huzzah! It's hashtag RCDC. Don't know why I'm yelling at you. Some good questions this week, but, mate, we didn't talk about it at the top of the show. 3TC in South Africa.
Solidarity.
Catches?
Oh, a little bit. I caught a bit of like social commentary on it. I don't think we got it in Australia. There's a lot of people in England, I think, got some.
Yeah, I saw some Twitter people in the UK. Can I just say that we should say at the top, like, this match was for a good purpose.
Yeah.
I think it was mostly to raise funds and support for people, all professional cricketers in South Africa who had been affected by the virus.
Right.
There was heaps of other good stuff going on there in terms of like important Black Lives Matter messages.
Yeah, the caveats.
After Blitzy said all lives don't matter until Black Lives do. Abe de Villiers said the game was about solidarity in South Africa. Springbok captain Francois Pina won the World Cup, obviously, was there too. He was kneeling next to Graham Smith and McInerney and Tini before the game. Yeah. CSA officials wore armbands with Black Lives Matter on them, much better than wearing, you know, Sonny B. Williams face masks as an example.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know.
Hell of a comparison there. Wow.
Fula Kwayo wore a Black Lives Matter t-shirt under his playing shirt. So there's heaps of good stuff. What the fuck was it?
I'm sorry we didn't talk about it at the top of the show as we said that we would. I know people have been hanging out for this long, just for our view on Solidarity Cup 3T cricket. Well, so Mark Nicholas is apparently like one of the brains, one of the great minds behind this new format.
Is he?
And he zoomed in before the game from all reports.
Okay.
Just to explain the great simplicity of the rules here, things like there are now three teams. You know, people think about how do you make cricket better?
Well, how do you make it better? Okay, more accessible.
Okay, let's test our assumptions. You know, you have two teams, how about three? You play in halves, there's eight players, the last man stands, there's a podium at the end.
Why not six?
I did enjoy, like, it got sledged a fair bit on Twitter, which is great, a great place
it's different.
For it, Reddit, stuff like that. I have enjoyed how many cricket fans have sledged it. The same fans that follow a game with four innings and has things called maidens, ducks, pauses for tea.
Yep.
And they scoff at how stupid these rules are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're a cricket fan by this point, you can't scoff at any stupidity when it comes to rules.
Good point.
Now, the other one that Dave Ticknor, friend of the show, great Twitter presence, in the UK pointed out was, and we missed this footage, and I really want to see if you do have it, please send it to us. Apparently at one point, Mackay Antini, who was commentating, according to Dave Ticknor, was laughing his cock clean off after his son dropped a caught and bowled off AB de Villiers. I really would give a lot for that footage. If anyone does have that footage, I'd like to hear Mackay Antini laughing hysterically at his son dropping a catch.
That's, and his cock coming off.
I laugh so hard that my penis fell off.
It's a touchable.
Everyone knows that. Yeah.
Yeah. That can happen sometimes.
AB de Villiers hit 61 and the Eagles won gold and everyone's on a podium at the end.
Yeah, and there was fucking paraphernalia going on all sorts. There was some confetti. There's a great image of AB de Villiers holding the gold medal or trophy or whatever, and then the guy, Timber Bavuma, his kites, that was the name of his team. He's looking at the, he's got a silver medal or trophy. He's just looking at it. He's like, what the fuck's this shit? And then Reza Hendricks, Kingfishers.
Yeah, the Kingfishers, yeah.
One, they took home the bronze. So, you know, everyone gets a prize, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Pretty
good.
Don't know what it was, though. Yep. It was sort of cricket, but I don't know what to make of any of it. Hashtag RCGC.
Let's do it.
All right. The first one comes in from Gabriel Thornton. Evening, fellas. I'm writing to you to ask your opinions on a very important matter. My brother, 22-year-old, and I, 20-year-old, have started our own cricket club based in Worcestershire, UK, called the Buffalo Barnstormers CC. Obviously, Rona has ruined the inaugural season majorly, but we are back and facing our first opponent tomorrow afternoon. Very exciting. I can't remember when this was written. Must have been recently. However, as the virus has slowed and closed majority of the businesses around the country for the last 4 months, we have no kit. So our only option is to wear a training garment we ordered before the lockdown, training singlet-style top with R pointing. One of the names on the back. So he sent an image, but obviously I can't.
Pointing.
Pointing,
yep.
So it's a white training symbol. There was like some pattern on it, flames or some shit. Does this match they wear make us the most village team in the history of village cricket? Or does it make us alpha males for showing off our stature and showing how fast we can bowl? Please let us know, as it is very important to us. The name on the back of my jersey is a tribute to the great Australian captain and the lack of player name licensing on Brian Lara 08 on the PlayStation 2. Cheers, boys.
Oh, that's the pointing.
That's a pointing bit, yeah.
Well, Gabriel, mm-hmm. I don't know Gabe. How – Gabe, yeah.
G2.
I don't know how what you've done can be classed as anything other than village. Yeah. The only caveat is if you guys have, you know, pipes and a back and a chest the size of
– Yeah, the back's important.
He goes. If you've got like, don't keep going.
Yeah, I want to interrupt here.
If you've got, you can only pull off a training singlet if you have wonderful biceps.
Yeah.
The fact that you say, Gabe, that it will show how fast we can bowl. I mean, I think the fact that you've got pointing on the back and you're talking about Brian Lara, it makes me think you don't bowl wheels.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's village unless you've got pipes. And again, if you're playing Brian Lara 08 and Raymond Ponting, I don't think you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you bowl fast, so yes. I think it's village. I do not think it's alpha male. And then on top of that, you've written in to us, which is probably not
well, I think like uniforms can be like statement makers. I'm thinking like, think of the Australian Opals, you know, basketball, women's female basketball jerseys circa like 96, 97, 98, that kind of thing. Or like NBA shirts, like T-shirts instead of the singlet style. Then the Victorian cricket team wearing shorts. That can also be a thing. But then, you know, some suggestions can be bad. Think like Sepp Blatter, you know, saying about women's yeah, the success of women's football would depend on tighter shorts, so there can be bad opinions about that. I mean, but also sometimes art isn't appreciated, just like how recently the bloke, the council worker who scrubbed off the latest Banksy artwork on the Tube, which was quoted to be around about worth $8 million. It's just scrubbed off. Yeah, scrubbed it off. But saying that, you know, if
vandalism.
If I turn up to a match and 11 blokes are wearing a singlet, I'm thinking record breaking runs and probably century circuit chop.
Well, I've got to say, if I'm turning up and I'm playing guys in singlets, I'm thinking these guys would want to be really good.
They better be fucking good.
Or super arrogant in a lot of ways, but the rig will give it away.
Mm.
Then I guess I'm thinking like if they're wearing training singlets and there's zero rig to them whatsoever, if we're talking about coat hangers or sort of skinny fat stuff,
yeah,
I'm thinking they're probably funny.
Skinny fat. It's going to be a nice day out.
Yeah. No, but just funny. It's like I'm going to wear a training singlet.
You're not thinking like, fuck, these guys are in singlet. There's going to be wheels.
Yeah.
We wear two helmets today. Two boxes.
Thanks, Gabe. Tom Collier writes in, hashtag RTSC, hey, champs. Mm-hmm. I thought you should know that Zach Crawley is the first ever Zach, spelt any variation, to play test cricket for any nation.
Okay.
Thanks. This makes me question my safety with such millennial names coming through the system because I'm used to safe names like Steve, Ricky, Michael and Shane. This would also mean the best players of the next generation will have names like Zach, Zayden or, and this is Elon Musk's kid, XHA12 Musk. That's how you say it. We had to look up how to say it to read this question properly. Yeah. Though that would be okay because we would just call him Musky. That's good. Yeah. So basically my question is, do you think Usman Khawaja will ever play test cricket again? From Tom.
Like how he signed it off. From Tom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Musky is an interesting one because Grimes said it's pronounced XAI, but then Elon Musk also said it's X-Ash Archangel.
Now, if I said a few things. You said A12 because he was talking about a train that he liked as well.
Heaps going on. He's obviously endorsing Kanye West for 2020 and stuff, and that's a whole different situation. But I like the name. I like the idea of saying bowler's name, X-Ash Archangel.
Yeah.
That's wheels.
Yeah.
You want to talk wheels. So then went down a bit of rabbit hole, Pez, and I found the Huffington Post article, which, as you know, is my Bible, from 2017, of the most unusual names from that year.
Yep.
Tesla. 130 girls, 11 boys. 130 girls for Tesla. I'm into a female cricketer called Tesla.
Yep. It's like Tessa.
Fanta, Beretta, Maybelline, Evian, Halo, Om, and Amen.
Yep.
Amen, 75 boys, 55 girls. Amen. Mm. Amen's playing test cricket.
Amen, that's not bad.
Mm. Opening the batting with Fanta and Amen.
Yeah. You get a few of these, this is off the top of my head, but... My wife works at a hospital,
yes.
Pediatrician,
mm-hmm.
and they come back with some pediatrician working with kids. Back with some pretty decent names for kids as well. There's a couple off my head. So some people might have heard of this because some of these have got around. But first one I remember is LA-A. What do you think that is?
LA-A.
Yeah.
I don't know.
LaDasha.
Fuck me.
Absida.
Good between the wickets.
Absida, ABCDE.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Another one was...
That's more of a middle name for me.
And this is less kind of funny, twin boys.
Yeah.
Steve.
Yeah.
Steven.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
When you said Steve, I think Mark straight away.
Yeah, exactly.
What's X-Archangel?
Yeah.
X-Ash Archangel.
What is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a quick.
George Arrow. Hello, gentlemen. I'm a 27-year-old female who loves cricket more than anything in the world. I have played myself for several years as a batsman / wicketkeeper and bowl right umpires, which will never see the light of day in anything other than an intra-club practice match. Anyway, a problem has become apparent over the last few months in which my husband is now refusing to take me for a net to give me throwdowns. This never used to be a problem, but now it's becoming apparent that he has little interest in helping me transform into the Chris Rogers-esque opener I know deep down I truly am. Anyway, my question is, what's a girl's got to do when her husband refuses to support her cricketing obsession and searches for any excuse to get out of attending said nets? And is it an acceptable proposition to use a portion of our home loan savings to buy a bowling machine with a self-feeder attached to it if he continues to deny me the throwdowns I crave so badly? Sounds like a euphemism. P.S. It's not like he didn't know what he was getting himself into. I left him waiting on our wedding day and was late to the ceremony because I refused to leave until Manus Labuschagne scored his maiden test double century at the SCG this year. And had my hen's day at the Boxing Day test to the disgust of 65% of my closest friends. Anyway, any help would be appreciated. Cheers. Mm. It's from Georgia.
Georgia Rowe. Okay, Georgia. I guess there's a few things I need to understand. Like, I need to understand your husband's relationship to cricket. Like, does he like it? Is this a competition thing? Like, he may have identity issues within this situation. Like, he may be the cricketer in his family.
Yeah.
And if so, like, I understand his concern, but you must tell him. He's going to have to accept that you are now the cricketer in the family, which will take him some time to get over. Obviously, he's not ready to accept that, so he's rebelling. The other thing I want to say, which is more of a positive thing on Georgia's part, is that, like, I'm not familiar. Like, what Georgia wants to do is mix cricket with her relationship, and she wants to do it positively. I have my partnership. I have my partner.
Mm.
I would like to engage in my hobbies with my partner, which is a normal, really normal, positive thing.
Yes.
For many guys, that's not the way it's done.
it's separation writ large, you know, like mixing cricket in your relationship is a new idea. It strikes me as a very healthy thing. Mm. I can't say I've ever really managed it, so I'm not in a great position to make a call here, but perhaps the husband needs to accept you are no longer the cricketer in the family. It is Georgia.
I don't know if you know this, Pez, but there was a World Health Organization investigation into this, and there's actually a direct correlation between throwdown denial and orgasm denial. So... So to Georgia's husband, just throw a couple of half volleys and maybe she'll forget about you not taking the bins out for the third time this week or whatever you people do.
Oh, fuck. Is that a euphemism?
Also.
No throwdowns tonight, babe.
Surely you'd be, like any bride-to-be would be lucky to have Pat Cummins attending her hens, which essentially what happened by going to the boxing day test. Steve Smith less so, sure. But I think that'll do.
It'll do.
Thanks to Barney Rone. Thanks to Josh Hazelwood. Thanks to Sam Robson. And thanks to all the people who wrote in this week. We'll see you next week.